हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So continuing with Krishna's peace mission. Krishna came out of the palace and mounted the chariot with Satyaki. His driver, Daruka, urged on the horses, and the chariot moved off as crowds of citizens loudly praised Krishna. He saw by the roadside Brahmins offering him worship while musically chanting sacred Vedic hymns. As he proceeded along the city's main highway, the sky cleared and a gentle breeze began to blow. The gods Gandharvas and celestial rishis assembled in the sky offering prayers. The Pandavas and their allies followed the slowly moving chariot on foot. The citizens threw flowers and rice on the road in front of the procession, right? Because that's considered auspicious, right? Whole grains and flowers. Means if it's ground, then you make patterns. But in this way, then it's kind of like just creating an auspicious atmosphere. Conch shells, kettle drums, and trumpets and other instruments sounded on all sides. When Krishna reached the city's outskirts, he dismounted. Yudhishthir embraced him, wishing him success. With tears in his eyes, he said, "O Govinda, please go to the pious lady who patiently awaits our return, passing her days in grief. She who is ever attached to the worship of the Supreme Lord, to whom fasts and devotions are second nature, and who is charitably disposed to all beings. Please offer her our deepest respects. Alas, when shall I be able to render my mother some good? Please comfort her, O Madhava, and tell her everything about us." The last time the Pandavas had seen Kunti was when they were going into exile. She had followed them along the road, crying and stumbling in sorrow and pain. Now it seemed they might not see her until after the war, if at all. Each of them sent her a message through Krishna. Yudhishthir continued, "Please also greet on our behalf our grandfather Bhishma and our preceptor Drona, the wise Vidura who has unlimited knowledge. We embrace with affection. Offer all the Kuru elders our respects and love." Yudhishthir gave a final message for Dhritarashtra. When he walked respectfully around Krishna with his hands folded, then he walked respectfully around Krishna with his hands folded. After this, Arjuna came forward to say farewell. He embraced Krishna and said, "O Govinda, it has been decided that you will demand for us one half of the kingdom. If Duryodhana refuses, I will certainly annihilate the Kshatriyas." Right. So now he's going in, because they've already asked for the this and that, and agreed to one village each. But now he's making the point, half of the kingdom, because that's what they got before, when they came back from that first exile after the House of Lakh. They were given half the kingdom, and that's what they had, like that. "There is no doubt of that. Go now, O Lord, and we shall remain always thinking of you. Everything will be done just as you desire." After the Pandavas had circumambulated him, Krishna climbed back into his chariot. Spurred on by Daruka, the horses took off. As the Pandavas stood watching, Krishna's chariot rapidly disappeared into the distance. A dust cloud rose behind it, and the five brothers stared after Krishna until the dust settled and they could no longer see him. Because right? You go out, these great personalities, like here to Krishna or the great Vaishnavas. You go and you go up to wherever is the natural point to go to. And then at that point you start and you stand there until you see them leave, until you can't see anymore. That's just because there is that aspect of the association of the Lord and the Vaishnavas is the most important thing, and so therefore it's there. At the same time you see is how Krishna going slowly and this and that and they're talking and then just a bit when it's the time to go, you just leave. you know, no sentiment, turning back and this and that. And no, because yes, sentiment is there, these things are there, so that's all done, and then you go, because duties are to be done, and so that, and everybody, you know, is going to perform their duties. And then after the duties, they come together again, and then, so that means when you're together, there's full attention, and then when it's time to go, then it has that attention. When you have your work, that has that full attention. So that way, then, everything gives its full flavor. Satyaki looked around as they sped towards Hastinapur. He saw various omens, both earthly and celestial. Lightning flashed in the cloudless sky, and behind them showers of rain fell. Rivers flowed backwards, and the earth shook. Satyaki saw water gushing out of wells, and fire blazing up on the horizon. The atmosphere darkened, and loud roars emanated from the sky, although no beings were visible. Although Satyaki saw all these terrible signs, the area around the chariot was calm. Right, so he's seeing that there, because these are the omens that they're going to see Duryodhana. These are the omens that are coming. But the chariot is not being disturbed by any of these. So you understand is they're fine where they're going. That's where the problem is. A cool breeze blew, carrying fragrant lotus petals and drops of water. The road ahead always seemed smooth and free of debris and thorns. They passed through various provinces and were greeted and praised by thousands of Brahmanas. The Brahmins worshipped Krishna with offerings of argya and flowers. Beautifully dressed and ornamented women stood by the roadside, ululating joyfully and throwing flower petals and fresh grains. You know, like we saw before when he was leaving Yudhishthira's company. Krishna stopped because when women are dressed nicely and are in a pleasant mood and doing auspicious activities, it always creates great auspiciousness, always creates a very good mood. Krishna stopped to greet the people and receive their worship. At the end of his first day's journey, he arrived at Brikashtala, where he spent the night in a spacious house offered by the local people. They brought him all kinds of food and drink, and he offered them blessings. Krishna and Satyaki then took rest on large, comfortable beds, still being praised by the Brahmanas. As Krishna approached Hastinapur, a fierce wind blew up. The city was ravaged. Huge trees were uprooted and buildings smashed. There were also other signs of foreboding. The sky became black and there were repeated clashes of thunder. Vultures and crow wheeled, crying loudly, while jackals howled. Right, so this is, you know, during the day, you know, so generally you don't expect the jackals howling, but if vultures are going around, means something's not going right, because otherwise they're way out in the, you know, in the jungle and stuff like that. They wouldn't be around the city. On the day before Krishna's arrival, right, so these are all happening at Hastinapur. They're getting all these evil omens, and they're just thinking, uh-oh, what's happening? On the day before Krishna's arrival, Dhritarashtra called an assembly to discuss how to greet him. He had been informed of Krishna's arrival at Brikashtala. Thinking of Vidura's instructions, the old king said, Krishna can fulfill all our desires if we satisfy him. On him the world's course depends, right? So he's saying, okay, you have he's looking at it that, you know, everything's connected to Krishna, but he's not really seeing Krishna at his personal desire, what he wants. He's simply seeing his own desire and his son's desire, and how you can get that done through these various agencies. So you're dealing with he's interacting with Krishna, but it's being done in a reverse way. It's not about relationship with Krishna, it's about getting done what you want. It's like going to visit some officer or minister to get your work done. You know, you're going to be nice and pleasant and deal with them very wonderfully. But the point is, you couldn't care less about the minister. So that's the difference. You see, Yudhishthira and them, it's about Krishna. That's what's most important. And then he has his pastimes unfolding. While for Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, it's just about what they can gain themselves. On him the world's course depends. He is the Lord of creation, the source of all power, wisdom, and opulence. He is worthy of our respect and worship in every way. Indeed, if we do not respect him, then misery will ensue. Right? They're just seeing it. It's not about God. God is in other words, their happiness and distress is the main thing. And God just becomes like a part of that. You know, in getting our happiness in that and avoiding distress, and God's included. You know, it's just part of a process rather than it's about God and our relationship with God. That's the difference between the devotees and the materialists. Even though the materialists may acknowledge God and respect God, they're not taking to the point actually of, eternal devotion. They're only taking it as a temporary devotion for the gaining the benefit. Let us prepare a welcome for him befitting the gods. By pleasing him in this way, we will obtain the fulfillment of our desires when he arrives. But since he mentioned before, he is the Lord of creation, source of all power, wisdom, and opulence. So by offering him so much opulence, how are they actually going to please him? It's all his anyway. It's all coming from him. So it's only through devotion that you actually please. But at least if they're respectful and all that, then that puts that in a proper light. Tritarasa suggested that they offer him the best of residences, equipped with everything enjoyable. They decided to offer Dushasana's palace, which was the most opulent in Hastinapur. So Dushasana, even though he's the second brother, he still has an affinity for focusing on these things. And so he'll make his the best and have the best arrangements and everything like that. Like you see, Ravana is there, but Kumbhakarna has the nicest arrangements because Ravana is busy with the administration, and Kumbhakarna will assist with that. But then he can put his attention into his own facilities. So in the same way, Duryodhana will be worrying about the administration and power, but Dushasana can then focus more on his enjoyment. The king then asked, what that various kinds of wealth be prepared to offer his gifts. I wish to present him with 16 golden chariots, each drawn by excellent horses of the same color, 8 huge elephants with tusks like plows, 100 virgins and the same number of men servants. Thousands of deer skins, costly blankets and silk shall be brought before Krishna, along with profuse quantities of gold and gems. Like, you know, and they don't have any problem bringing all these things because you have to remember, they have their own wealth, but they've also taken Yudhishthira's. And so before, Dhritarashtra made the point is, why do you need all this? You have enough wealth. You know, you can go your whole life, you'll be fine, you know. And so now they also have Yudhishthira's, which was even way greater than theirs. Let all my sons, with the exception of Duryodhana, go out to greet him. The citizens should line the streets, and beautiful dancing girls and actors should perform for his pleasure. Decorate the city with flags, festoons, and garlands. Sweep all the roads and drench them with scented water. Right, so you're not even just sprinkling water to keep down the dust. It's scented water. So if you're using rose water, the whole place will smell like rose or karuda, like this. Tomorrow we will declare a festival in honor of Keshava. When Dhritarashtra stopped, Vidura said, O king, you are respected in this world as a man of virtue, old in wisdom and knowing what is right. You desire to please Krishna. This is good, but in my opinion, you are not properly motivated. You wish to win over the Lord of the Yadavas by offering him wealth, yet you will not accede to his real desire that you surrender even 5 villages to the Pandavas. All your ministrations and gifts will prove useless if you do not grant Yudhishthira his rights. For sure, the all-powerful Govinda will not even cast his eyes upon your wealth. If you really want to please him, do as he asks. Act as a father should act towards his children. Do not bring about your son's destruction by your own foolishness. Right? So he's saying, you know, a father would act towards his children to protect them, but you're not protecting. You're giving in to his desires that will destroy him. Duryodhana glanced at Shakuni and stood to speak. What Vidura has said regarding Krishna is correct. Kind words and gifts will not separate him from the Pandavas' cause. Therefore, I feel we should not offer him wealth. Although Krishna is worthy of all this worship and more, he will simply see our attempts as a sign of weakness. Our gifts of wealth, while demeaning us, will not sway him from his determination for war. It may even anger him. So he's pointing out always good qualities and all these things. The demoniac nature always takes it as a weakness because you're being sentimental, you're being this, you're showing, oh, we're trying so hard, so that's our weakness. If we're strong, we'll stand up there and be arrogant and in your face. So that's the natural demoniac nature. It's not that we're talking about the Kshatriya nature of, you know, being strong in battle. So that's the the demoniac nature always is thinking that any sign of good qualities is a weakness, because then you're not focused on your, you know, one-pointed attention of your own self-centered desires, right? Because they take it, if it's about myself, then it's strong, and if I consider anyone else, I'm showing weakness. It's the natural demoniac nature. Bhishma shook his head. Janardhan will not become angry whether he is properly received or not. We cannot insult him, nor can we win him over. Whatever he desires will happen, and we cannot check it by any means. Our only course of action is to abide by his wishes. Krishna will surely say only what is conducive to the welfare of all beings, right? Because it's his world, so he's naturally going to want to see it go smoothly. We should follow his directions. O king, effect peace with the Pandavas, for this is Krishna's desire. Duryodhana, his eyes smoldering, retorted, I will never be able to share power with the Pandavas. I have another idea. When Krishna enters the assembly, I will take him captive. With him as my prisoner, the Yadus, Rishnis, Pandavas, and indeed the whole world will be at my disposal. We should think of some means to carry out this plan without him suspecting anything. Right? First, he's going, you know, he understands he deserves more, and then at the same time, they think that they can control him. So that's the understand. Like you see Hiranyakashipu, Vishnu is the controller of everything and this and that, but I will kill him. He is eternal, but I will kill him. You know, so in the same way as that, oh, like that, but everyone depends, the whole world depends upon him. You know, nothing depends on Duryodhana. But I will capture Krishna, then the whole world will depend upon me. Like that. You know, but their false ego is always impressive. Duryodhana had discussed this idea with Shakuni and Karna, and had already made arrangements, whether or not the court agreed. Right, so he's already prepared this before, because he listened, okay, they're going to do all that, but then he says, hey, they're not going to, he's not going to care. And Bhishma says, yeah, he's not, so you should follow what he says. He says, no, we know, we have our plans. Taking Krishna prisoner seemed to him the best course of action. The Pandavas would never dare attack them if they were holding Krishna. Because if Krishna's there, then why would they attack? But the point is, he doesn't understand. You can't kill Krishna. Krishna knows what you're doing. He's sitting in your heart and all this. But, you know, this is the foolishness of the... As Duryodhana made his foolhardy suggestion, the kings in the assembly gasped. Dhritarashtra was shocked and said angrily, O child, do not speak in this way. This is against eternal virtue. A messenger should never be violated, what to speak of one such as Krishna, right? So he's just looking at it that you have your eternal virtue, and so you follow that, you get good results, and so you're going against that, let alone it's Krishna, but he's not looking at it from the devotional. But he knows he's an elevated person. He is our relative and is dear to us all. What wrong has he ever done to Kurus? He should certainly not be made captive, right? So he's never done anything wrong. In fact, for Duryodhana, he gained his army. You know, Srila Prabhupada mentioned, you know, that it's, you know, very big. He said it was 18 Akshauhinis, just Krishna's army. You know, so then, you know, what are they talking about, you know? Bhishma's furious voice then rang out. Your son is on the verge of oblivion, O king. He chooses only evil and never good. Although advised by numerous well-wishers, you follow him on the unrighteous path towards certain ruin. He will cease to exist the moment he comes against Krishna. Who can do anything he can desires without the least exertion? That means Krishna can do anything he wants without the least exertion. I dare not listen any more to the words from this sinful person. Bhishma strode out of the assembly hall in a rage. Dhritarashtra then ended the session and everyone left, censuring Duryodhana. His suggestion had gone beyond the bounds of propriety. Surely Dhritarashtra would now see the folly of supporting him. As they left the hall, the kings and ministers looked at the blind king, who sat in silence. What would he say when Krishna arrived the next morning? Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.